It's a Football Tuesday. And where else would you rather be on a Football Tuesday than right here with us? Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, right?
So where I'd rather be.
I mean, this is the place to be.
It is.
Sitting in the dog bowl, sitting in this glass-encased studio, this beautiful studio that's got a lot more lights in it, by the way, than when we started. Are you adjusted to that? Because it's different now. It's almost sunglasses.
It did take a while. That's why I always have them right here, just an arm's length away, because sometimes you need them. And they're hot. I think they're hot lights.
They are.
It's like they're like TV studio lights.
Well, and I think ultimately that's the goal here is to put this show, well, you know, maybe have it on our website or we can do kind of a TV combination, because that's what they do with these radio show notes, right? Mike and Dan Patrick, and we might as well have our radio show slash CBD TV show.
Yeah.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Also, what's interesting too is we got a photo shoot today.
I've heard that.
Big time photo shoot. So John Reed, our team photographer, is coming in here to photograph us, Nathan and yours truly, for some promotional stuff. But here's the thing: the walls are very orange. Everything's very orange in here. If you've seen some shots that we've had on Twitter, different places, you know, orange chairs, orange carpeting.
Oh, it's orange.
It's orange. Just the white ceiling and the white table here are the only things that aren't intensely orange. So we're supposed to stand up against this backdrop, this wall, as I hear it. And we've got, like, different you were supposed to wear Browns gear. One of them is an orange shirt. And you and I actually talked about this, because if we wear your orange today, basically they'll see your head and your arms.
It would be like a green screen.
It'll be an orange screen, green screen.
It would be odd. You know, am I the only person that's ever wondered, given all the orange associated with the Cleveland Browns, why they were never – it almost seems sometimes like maybe they're the Cleveland Oranges.
There's a lot of orange in this team. And, you know, I get some stuff because, again, coming from the central – I've been here a long time, but coming from the central part of New York State, where and then Western New York, where I spent a lot of years covering the Buffalo Bills, and it's sort of like the whole red, white, and blue thing going on there. Now, God bless them. Our friends there are really like family. I mean, it becomes family we just have incredible dynamics with people that who live in our neighborhood, where our kids grew up and everything else. And so ever since I've been affiliated with the Browns, and of course I come back with all kinds of Browns gear, and it's all Browns. Everything about me is Browns. Ohio plate on the car, everything else.
Yeah.
And when I go back to visit there, and then they say, you know, we really want to support you and your family and your Browns interests, Vic, but it's those colors are difficult. They said, how do you, you know, and I said, well, they are with it. That's our colors. That's our team. And, you know, you rock those with pride. So I've gotten a few people to actually don the Browns colors, and they see the gear. Nike's done some nice things,
sure,
with it, you know, to make it. But and one woman was a fashion consultant, a friend of ours, and she said, you know, if you had a list the most challenging colors to use in putting together anything fashion wise, brown and orange is a challenge.
It's right up. It is a challenge. I like the orange uniforms though. When they go the orange unis, the orange helmets with the white pants, I think that's a sharp look. Whether we're the Browns or the Oranges, it doesn't matter to me. I think I like that look.
I love the look. 216-578-0850. That's why I'm rocking my brown shirt right now. 216-578-0850. Will in Brook Park is on the line with us now. Hey, Will.
Hey guys, love the show. Try to listen every day.
Thank you.
I want to talk about LT and Trent specifically for a moment. I personally would like to see Trent play at least a quarter of the next 2 weeks and not play the final preseason game. If that happens, even if he gets nicked, I believe he'll have 2.5 to 3 weeks before the opener, between the end of game three and the opener. It's at least 2 weeks.
Yep.
And the thing is, I think there's something to be said for timing and chemistry to be developed with the quarterback and the offensive line. And LT had developed that by the time he was not playing in the preseason. And Trent really, he was never really at full strength last year, so his speed is a little different hitting the hole and the line and Whedon and the whole thing. And I'd like to see, not to mention, I'd like to see him get hit a little bit just to get used to that. I'm not panicking if he doesn't. Certainly, I trust North Turner and the coaches, so if that's the route they go, I'm not going to be calling up whining about it. But, you know, at this point, I'd like to see him play maybe a quarter next week, and then that'll be it. And Like I said, I think that's 2.5 weeks or more before they actually kick off on the 8th there.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. There's a lot of recovery time, Will, and thank you so much for the call. And we are pleased to bring in right now a regular on this show, our great friend, one Gerard Cherry. Hey, Gerard.
Hey, Vic. What's going on with you, man?
Well, we're talking about one of your topics, the Trent Richardson usage topic, which we know how you feel. We know you think he should be out there more, be playing more, and you've brought up the term preferential treatment, and you are speaking from a place of former player and what the locker room dynamics are on that. So let's just get into that again, because the issue has come up now that he may or may not, and there are those who maybe think he won't play Thursday night. I guess we'll get a clearer picture, we think, from Chud today on that. But where are you if this is now 2 games that he doesn't play?
If it's 2 games he doesn't play, my mindset becomes, okay, there is a reason why he's not playing. Therefore, leave him out, let him get as much rest as possible so he can become healthy September the 8th. Because ultimately, at that point, it's all about that. But my concern is, because I'm hearing a lot of people say, well, we can rest him and do this. But you still have to get in football shape. And you say you don't play through the preseason, you may not be effective if you don't practice at all. And he's practicing, don't get me wrong, or if you don't play at all. So there's a fine line, obviously, that the team has to walk in regards to how you handle him. Yeah, but I'm of the mindset, give him some feel of just getting hit, because he strikes me as a guy who needs to get hit and get comfortable in that role to be at his best. And that's what you want for him to be at his best come opening week. And that requires him just getting a little taste of football. I say you do that, but if they feel that way and the team, the doctors, and everyone else involved has had that discussion with Trent, and he's okay with it, at this point, I sign off on it, because as a player, I'm saying, okay, it's out of his hands. He's not controlling this. And that's when it comes across as if he's liking this and he's cool with sitting out, then I have more of an issue. But if it's one of those situations where it's strictly, hey, this is what the doctor's saying and team is being overcautious, I can't fault him for that.
Yeah, he sounds definitely frustrated about not playing. But can you put in perspective what the hitting means to get that in the preseason, speaking from experience of doing that, and exactly how that benefits, and just define that whole process of getting hit ready for the season?
Just from a confidence standpoint, getting hit and getting back up, making tackles and feeling like, hey, I can do this, my body can adjust to it, I can acclimate, and just I'm tough enough. And you will have those questions where, okay, can I handle that? Can I absorb that? And once you go through it and you get knocked silly and you get right back up, oh, it's football again. So you need those type of situations to take place for it, just to remind you that it is something that you can do. Now some guys are special. They don't need none of that, and they will still go out there and perform at a high level. But there's far fewer of those guys than there are the majority. But if you get hit and you are the type of guy that needs to get hit and you kind of feed off that, then you're doing yourself a disservice if that's your approach to where you require the contact to get ready.
And you know, I think it's a delicate balance here. I will say Trent Richardson last year, his second game of the season against Cincinnati, was one of his better games of the season. And last year he didn't have the benefit of going through really anything prior to the season. At least he's practicing this year. And in that game I'm referencing, 19 carries, 109 yards and a score, 4 catches, 36 yards and another hush down as well. So he's shown that even with very little work, he can get it going quickly. And he's had much more work this year. Do you think like maybe, I was saying a series maybe in the third game where he gets a carry, gets a catch, and then that would be fine for me. At least he gets a taste of being hit, but you're not really overexposing him.
Yeah, and I'd say that would work as well, because if you look at last year, he was very physical in that first game in Philadelphia, so much so they made a rule.
They changed the rule. That's right.
To prevent him from being what he is, which is a very physical running back. So, yeah, he can do that, and I don't doubt him in that regard. I guess I'm speaking for Trent when I say, because I've heard Trent say, I like getting in the mix, and I like being involved, and I like getting the feel of being in contact and how that feels. But if the team feels the other way around, you respect that. But, yeah, go ahead and let them go out there, Nathan, like you suggested, and get a series and just get that feel, because there will be game planning involved in that third preseason game. Just to get used to that and being a part of the team, and especially his timing and rhythm with the offensive line. But we're all well aware, though, for running back, it's definitely much more of a natural feel and just doing what comes natural as opposed to a quarterback, where they require you to think more. Ultimately, you want it to be natural, but we know that's not the case.
So, Certainly. And I was just going to, you know, whether we see him or not, they have a plan, and this is the plan all along. And I think had it not even been the case that Trent Richardson was nicked up, I think he could have played in the first one. I don't think he would have played in that game at all. And I think it kind of changes the discussion, as you said, now where we are here as we get ready for the second preseason game. The defensive backfield, Gerard, which you know a lot about, the quarterback position. We got Chris Owens came back to practice yesterday for the Browns. Leon McFadden still out. One of the guys, though, who seems to be playing, taking advantage of the opportunity, and Vic highlighted him in his Carucci's Call blog on ClevelandBrowns.com, is Trevin Wade. Talk a little bit about what you've seen from Trevin Wade, and yesterday in the two-minute drill, he had a couple nice pass breakups and really was doing pretty well against Josh Gordon and Greg Little.
Well, that's good to hear, because there's been some questions of whether or not he's going to be able to step up and fulfill his role. But to be making plays against the premier receivers on your team, that's a start. And let's be real here. One of the issues that we have in the secondary is depth. And if that can be that pleasant surprise or take his game to the next level, he'll do this team a favor as well as himself and get an opportunity to be on the NFL roster come September the 8th. So I'm very encouraged to hear that and looking forward to see that take place and translate on the actual football field, because you don't want to be that guy that when the lights come on, and when I mean the lights come on, when you actually – in a stadium and people are yelling and screaming, that you freeze up. So be that guy and translate what you did from practice field to football field, and mostly with him being successful against a Little and a Gordon, his confidence is rising as well.
Yeah, and 5'10 doesn't make him a tiny corner in the least, but you know, it's not the biggest size that you're looking at, and it's commensurate, I think, with most of the size of the DBs or the corners on this team around that 5'9 range. But you're going up against 6'2 Greg Little, who's also, you know, all rocked out. I mean, he's a big, physical, broad-shouldered guy, and he's dealing with him and denying him in a play, which his inside position was impressive. And then Rob Jedzinski sets up the situation, Gerard. He goes, one play, fourth down at the 4, and Whedon's trying to put the ball in the end zone to Josh Gordon, who's, six, you know how big he is, 6'3, and Wade's there again to break it up. So talk a little bit about the idea of getting position when you're matching up and giving away all that height and size to a receiver.
Yeah, and typically, if you have DBs, typically are stronger than the wide receivers, because wide receivers outside of Greg Little are more finesse players. And he's using Wade, his vertical jumping ability as well as his strength, to his advantage. And when you're in those short areas of the red zone, in a lot of ways, it takes away outside the jumping ability for the wide receivers, because they can't run full speed because they'll be out of control and off balance. So maybe he may be situational there where he was one of the guys we bring in on the goal line situations. But I want to see what he's doing in the open field, Vic. When it's first and 10 and you're on the 20-yard line going towards the end zone, how do you respond to that? Because that's really where you get to test the mettle of a cornerback, and is he comfortable in that level of open space? Because we're in the red zone. That's actually easier for a cornerback. A lot of people don't realize it, but it makes it much easier to play in that position, because you don't have to worry about running full speed. You're used to being under control, and now the wide receivers have to temper their gait and slow down.
Speaking of the defensive backfield, how important is it to get T.J. Ward, Tayshawn Gibson, who will make their preseason debuts hopefully this Thursday against the Detroit Lions? When you're talking about a Ray Horton defense that's got so many blitzes, so much movement up front, how important for the chemistry in the secondary in a defense that, as T.J. Ward told us here on Cleveland Browns Daily yesterday, requires a lot of communication? How important is it to get those guys out there and get them communicating in game situations?
Oh, it's of the utmost importance. Like a good marriage, it's all about communication. If you're not talking to the missus, things are going to go wrong. And if you're not talking to your fellow safety, trust me, things are going to go wrong. And you don't want, that's the last place on the defensive football field you want guys not to have a communication or breakdown in that. So it is very important that those two communicate, establish a rapport in a language in which they understand each other, can sense the body language, and understand when one person says one thing, it means that, as opposed to assuming something else. So, yes, it's of the utmost importance that they get their timing down, that they get a rhythm down, and that they get an understanding, and that they talk and vibe and relate off of each other.
Yeah, it's an impressive thing, too, and we hit on this a little bit earlier in the show about, I called it the building of the chemistry or the bonding, all the things that you want to see a team show in coming together, and to see like a Joe Hayden, the fourth-year guy talking to a Gibson after a play and having that conversation about the coverage and the details of it all, that struck me as a really good thing, especially, too, that Gibson's asking the questions and trying to download and not assuming he knows, you know, all that he needs to know, and he's seeking the counsel of a veteran. I took that, and I saw some other moments, Chris Obanaya offering some advice to Barkevious Mingo, I mean, the fullback talking to the outside linebacker about the protections that they have and how maybe he could defeat that as an outside linebacker, and then just other instances of veteran players helping out younger guys. Does that tell you something about the beginning of a chemistry build here?
Oh, it tells me a lot. Well, it tells me, for one, you got a lot of unselfish and humble players, and you can coach those guys. You can get somewhere with those type of guys. You got an I know it all, you can't tell me nothing, this is my team, this is my defense, my offense type of guys on your team. Good luck with that, because typically those are me guys and not team guys. And from my experience, I want to have a bunch of team guys surrounding me on the football field. So right there, Vic, yeah, that speaks volumes about where this culture change is taking place. But to have Obanaya converse with Mingo, and like you guys said, because I heard you earlier, give him tips on how to beat blocks, he's not doing himself no favor if Mingo uses the same advice against him.
Right.
The beauty of it is that they're making that transition about when you get into preseason games from being, okay, yeah, you're still my opponent per se, and we compete against each other, but now we're becoming teammates. And that's why preseason training camp is so important, because it gives you an opportunity to build bonds with guys in which you perceive and see them as a teammate, and you have their back and they have yours. And when you do gestures like Obanias, like what Joe Hayden did with Gibson, that starts developing those bonds, and where it's more than just being on a football field together, but you actually have concern and care for one another.
Gerard, terrific. Hey, you're going to be in studio for the full 2 hours these next few days, so we're looking forward to that, my man.
Yes, we are. We will be there, and everything will be fair.
Good. That's a good way to put it. All right, he is Gerard Cherry, and again, you hear him regularly on this show. We have got much more coming up, a conversation with Tom Withers from the Associated Press, who covers the Browns, veteran beat writer for them. That'll be coming up, and we'll hit some national topics in this hour. We'll talk maybe a little bit about Matthew Stafford, the quarterback of the Lions, who this Browns team is going to see on Thursday. It is Vic Carucci with Nathan Zagura. The show is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. You're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR. Maybe he'll be a little better Saturday.